Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are pumped to bring on Dazer Toys. Dan comes on crushing it. He's only been around for a short time doing toys, but his graphic design skills have given him an eye to make incredible toys like Big Guy. They are so good, and he jumped into the deep end and did Designer Con and crushed it and did so well. So we are so pumped to have him on. If you want to jump on and support Toys on Tap, you can do it the free way by liking, rating, reviewing wherever you get podcasts. You can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. Jump over to the YouTube channel at Toys on Tap. And if you want even more, you can jump on patreon.com/toysontap. Get a little bit of the nitty gritty. All the stuff that happens over there is just for you. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. I'm glad that you're on. I mean, I saw you at DesignerCon. You were at one of the tables, correct?
Yeah, that's right. All the way back.
Yeah. How DesignerCon was set up was so weird this year, but I saw you there, and then, I mean, I've seen these robots, and I immediately, when I saw them on Instagram, had to reach out and try to find you a date.
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm a brand new beginner here, so I'm just doing the jumped to the deep end at DesignerCon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best part about this podcast is, like, regardless if you've been a maker forever or if you just started yesterday, this is the space. And so I'm really pumped that you're on today.
Oh, good. Yeah, thank you for having me.
And so we're gonna jump in, but before we do, just like every episode, tell us who you are, what you do, all the good stuff.
My name is Dan Ryder. My company is Dazer Toys. My day job is I'm a graphic designer. I've been doing graphic design for 34 years now. Actually, I started in printing, but I moved into graphic design. I was in printing right as it was going digital, and so I was really young, so it was easier for me to just kind of figure it out before all the old guys. Back then, the old guy, now the old guy.
Yeah.
It was easier for me to figure out how to make the switch. And then from there, I just went into graphic design.
Awesome. I mean, everything about your designs of robots and stuff gives off like Iron Giant vibes and those types of, like, it just feels like a friendly metal robot, which I love. But before, I mean, we got to get to know you as the artist, and that means what you grew up with, those kind of things. So take me back to your childhood. Tell me about the toys you had, collecting, cartoons, whatever that looks like.
So I didn't really play with a lot of toys as a kid until obviously Star Wars came out. I think that's a lot of people's story. Star Wars came out right when I turned 8, so I was like the perfect demographic. And even then, I really didn't get, well, obviously the toys didn't really come out till about a year later. And I wasn't really into that because R2-D2 didn't look like R2-D2, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But once I held them in my hand, I was hooked. And I think that's kind of what I like about what I'm doing now is just when you hold something in your hand, you get that quick connection with it.
That's such a good explanation. So, once you held it, it was over.
It was over. It was like, oh, okay, now I'm connected to Star Wars, you know, because, 77, Star Wars was everywhere. It was a crazy phenomenon.
Yeah.
And then just being a kid, being into it, you know, that kind of, I mean, I'm still really kind of into Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, once you're in, rarely do you ever leave. People say like, oh, I'm done, the new movies or whatever. No, you're not. You'll be back.
Right. And I even like the new movies. I even like Revenge of the Sith. I really enjoy that one a lot, which I didn't think that one really kind of stuck with me because it's the whole, you know, the transition of Anakin into Darth Vader. But that's kind of what I was into. And then I started collecting in my adult years, I started collecting the Star Wars figures over again when they started bringing them out down in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a 90s kid. I was born in 1990. It's funny to say, to hear you say, like, you were the prime demographic for the other one. Because, like, when episode one came out, I was 9 years old. I was the person they were going for. And I loved it when it came out. And then you go back and watch it, and you're like, uh-oh, this is a little tough. But, on top of that, I had the worst side of Star Wars toys. Like, all the buff Anakin and just the, right. the junky Power of the Force toys that just absolutely sucked. So it's nice to hear that you actually went back and had both.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because my daughter is your age, and so when the special editions came out, I stood in line with her, and she was my age, you know, when I went and saw them. So it was kind of fun to see them through her eyes all over again because I hadn't seen them in the theater for 20 years at that point, I think.
Yeah,
or whatever it was. Yes.
And that's got to be such a cool feeling to, like, full circle it back with your kid. Like, we're going to get Star Wars out and, like, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So all my girls are into Star Wars because I made them.
Yeah. What's crazy, as a kid, I remember watching the box set of VHS. I remember getting a box set, and, the only parts I'm so consumed by the aliens more than anything. Like, the story's good, and I enjoy Star Wars, but, like, the Ewoks were so fun, and I have, like, a collection of Ewok toys. Or, like, Max Rebo is unreal, and we know nothing about him.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that too, because, like, I like to collect like the background characters of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I picked up a Super 7 Mike TV. Awesome. I didn't get a Charlie and I didn't get the Willy Wonka. I got Mike TV because I thought, I just kind of like the background characters and stuff.
Yeah. And which is, like, those things, they're more interesting because they're a little, like, it feels like a little mysterious almost. Like, we don't know really what's going on.
Right.
But so at what age, I mean, the sad day, right? What age did we get rid of all of our toys and kind of move on and grow up a little bit?
Yeah.
People are hounding us.
I didn't really get rid of a lot. I mean, I have a lot of my original figures.
Lucky man.
They're all good.
Yeah.
I had a lot of stuff. I had a unfortunate, my house burnt down about 6 years ago.
Oh, bummer.
And so I lost, like, a lot of stuff, but not my main characters, not my main figures. Those were in storage. So that's good. So I still have those. I lost my little R2-D2 because I had a really big R2-D2 collection.
Yeah.
That I started about 15 years ago, just trying to get every little one, the bootlegs, something from Japan, anything that was R2-D2 I was collecting at the time.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to rebuild that collection up. Holy moly. That's so sad.
Well, it's funny because I resisted collecting physical things again for a while, but now I'm kind of back off the wagon with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool to hear that you, like, still have some of your original ones. I have none of my original toys. So it's, like, it's cool to hear that some people get that, like, and still are able to do that. At what point does art kind of start playing a role? I mean, in toy making, it's every artistic bone in our body is, like, thrown into each toy. So, like, when did we start to breathe that art?
When did I start making toys? Or
I think
fairly recent.
Well, I think art in general, like, as you're getting older, like, we're probably, let's say we're in your teens, where do you start to figure out that art is something you want to do or some kind of artistic?
I think outlet? I've always felt that way. I mean, I've always drawn. I was always drawing stuff. I had an art kit from very young when I was a child.
Yeah.
I always tried to paint a little bit here. I took art classes in high school and a little bit in college. But art's always kind of been part of my life.
I mean,
drawing?
Yeah. Are we talking drawing? Are we talking, because now, I mean, with graphic design that you moved into, it means you've got an eye for, like, where things need to be, placement, all that kind of cool stuff. So,
yeah. So, well, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a filmmaker, like everybody who saw Star Wars and watched all the special effects, specials afterwards. So I got kind of interested in graphic design because I was making my own props, like passports and stuff like that. You would draw out every little, try to, because all we could do is draw back then, and we didn't even, couldn't even set type. And so when I did film and community college, and I did all the titles with rub-on letters on a black background, because that was really the state of the art back then. So you really, people don't realize that before like 1990, you had to send stuff out to get typeset at a type house.
Which is
There was no
crazy.
doing it yourself. And also, when I was a kid, I tended to build models, and I think that really also kind of satisfied me in the way you can have an airplane that you've seen at an air show, in your hand, and paint it the way you want to paint it and make it look realistic. And I think that's kind of the beginning of my journey toward that ends in toy making now,
I have never and will never finish a full model. I had them when I was a kid. For some reason, my grandfather thought this is what we should get Abraham. This is what we should get him. And it was like old World War II tanks and jeeps and planes or whatever. And I would always get so pumped, open them, immediately get rid of them.
Yes, I think I've started a lot more than I finished, especially when I was younger, because I think I got to a point where I thought it looked really good and I didn't want to mess it up by my bad skills.
I like the hard part is like as a kid without an adult helping you, that thing's never gonna happen. You're never gonna be able to
Right.
make that. And so I just would
That's true.
destroy things, and I couldn't figure out the instructions all the time. So it was just a madhouse.
And I think we're very lucky now because we have a lot of really great resources on YouTube. There's a lot of guys who show you how to paint stuff, and a lot of guys who show you how to make it look realistic and what techniques to use. And eventually I'll start painting my toys, but we'll see if we get to that point. But I like the monochromatic side of it, really. I like the full color of the robots, But a lot of people like it to be embellished a little bit. And so I might start doing that.
I think I mean, it's a big jump from graphic design to making toys. You go to school for art. I'm assuming so you can work in graphic design.
I did not. I kind of fell into
Oh,
it. I kind of had
tell me how
started
you
a family
fell
early.
into
So,
that.
well, it was through printing again. I started a family early, so I got a job in printing. And then from there, I moved. They brought in a graphic design department that was fully digital, and nobody knew. It was a union shop, and so there was rules about processing film. So the guys in the graphic design department could send to the printer, but I had to pull it out and put it through the processor because that was the union rules. It was a union shop. And then at a certain point, I kind of got so much better at the programs like Photoshop and Illustrator that I kind of just moved full time into their department and was no longer, in the print side of it.
How, I mean, to
And
fall into something like that is like, it's crazy. Like, because you never know when you're in the midst of starting it, you never know how it's going to impact the rest of your career.
yeah, I got very lucky. I think I was just at the r right place at the right time.
How
Yeah,
long
I
were you
recognize
in
how
that
lucky I
place?
was. So I was in that place for 2 years, and then I moved to a small print shop in Palm Springs, and I set up their digital prepress systems there. And then I came back to the original place after 2 years as a full-time graphic designer.
Unreal.
So it was just, I mean, it was just pure luck,
What
pure
year are we
luck.
talking?
When I got back to LA, it was 94.
Okay, so like real early years of any kind of
Real early.
Photoshop stuff.
I started Photoshop 2.2.2 201, which had no layers. Which is, I mean, we didn't get layers in Photoshop until version 3. It was crazy. Yeah,
that is crazy. And I mean, that was that as Photoshop was still on floppy disks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like 5 or 6 floppy disks.
That's so crazy. That I built this wall in the facility I work with youth, and it was all floppy disks on a wall. And there was a bunch of Photoshop ones. And so I would ask him, like, how much do you think could fit on one of these floppy disks? And they were like, oh, I don't, like 10, 20 movies. And I was like, try like a half a picture, like not a lot.
Yeah, really. Not a lot at all.
And so you do graphic design. How long do you stay at that company?
I was at that company for another 3 years. And then I started my own company with, who was with the guy who was actually my boss at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was just the two of us. And I had done that. I had him as a partner up until about 2016. And now I just do things on my own.
So the guy that was above
we worked in the, he liked me, and we, and I knew a lot more of the technical side of setting up the computers and the servers and stuff like that. And he did a lot of the sales side, and then we just designed together.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And primarily we did work for the movie studios. It's like, okay. So when I was at the original company, we were doing, newspaper ads back when they advertised movies in the newspaper.
Yeah.
So we would make like 16 or 18 different size ads for the theaters and then send them all across the country. And then when I went off on my own, mainly did DVD packaging.
Okay.
For like catalog titles, re-releases and stuff like that.
And then was Blu-ray, this and then now. Like a third party company or like a middleman where people would send you stuff to then distribute?
So we got the art and the direction, and we put, we built the packaging and then we sent it back to whoever printed it.
Oh, awesome. That's a cool job.
We didn't do any of the printing. Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
And then,
but now there's no more packaging.
Yeah. Like, that's tough, right? Like, it seems like your life in graphic design seems like it's become so much or so easy to get into graphic design now, or it's like with YouTube, you can learn on the go. Has it just been harder to, like, now that there's no packaging to design and that kind of stuff, like what's next? Like, what are we doing with graphic design now?
Yeah, that's for the studios, I don't know that there's that much that they do. I mean, if you look on Disney Plus, you can see a lot of my art still.
That's awesome.
I did the art and then, you know, hand over the Photoshop files, and that was that, you know. It was work for hire, so I didn't really own the art.
That's amazing. I'm assuming you're credited somewhere for this stuff, right?
Nope. No.
Oh my gosh. Of course, Disney. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's their art, basically. I just, you know.
Yeah.
Put it together and, you know.
And so, I mean, going into that point and lead me up until we start discovering that we want to make toys. How did we approach toy making from graphic design? Big jump.
Well, toys, like, I kind of was aware of some bootleg scene because I had heard about Sucklord. I saw him on a TV show, and then I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I kind of started looking at that because I was at the time still looking for just unique R2D2s and stuff like that. But then my friend got a 3D printer, and we were starting to sculpt in a program called Medium, which was for Oculus. So it was VR. And I started doing that just to make little robots and stuff. And then at one point we scanned my head so I could make my own action figures and pop off, Luke Skywalker's head and put my head on the stormtrooper, so I had my own stormtrooper. And then we got a resin printer, so it was a lot better. And then I'm really kind of lazy, so medium was I loved it. It was fun to use, and I really liked it. But when they stopped really kind of, once Adobe bought it, and so they stopped really developing it. And the other thing was is I'm kind of just lazy to set up the system, put the goggles on. So I started sculpting in Nomad Sculpt, which is easy peasy because I mean, once I was never really good at the 3D part of design, but between the VR, the VR, I was getting really good at the 3D space, and then that translated real easy to medium. And then I watched a couple, I watched Dave Reed's tutorials, and I kind of picked it up pretty easy. And then we started printing those. And then I'm like, well, now I want to try articulation, and I want to try this, Also, I kind of got into molding, and I watch craft. I think everybody watches Craftsman. That's how they kind of got into molding. So I would take the figure, and then I would make a mold out of it, and pour resin. I just love the feel of the semi-rigid resins because they kind of feel like, Star Wars figurey kind of.
Take me back to discovering Suck Lord. I mean, he's been on this podcast, I think 6 times. He has his own,
Yeah.
and then he has his whole like rundown of his life. And he is such a unique toy maker because there's like, I love bootleg toys. So I have a bunch of bootleg Ninja Turtles, and it usually comes from a different country, and there's something that's a little off. And then you get the Mexican bootleg turtles, and they're like really off. And then you
Yeah.
have bootleg indie toys, which is kind of where Suck Lord falls, and then it moves to regular indie toys and all these things. So just like tell me about first encountering Suck Lord's toys.
Well, I saw him on a TV show called, I think it was called Work of Art, which was like kind of an art competition show. And then I was like, wait a second, that's kind of really interesting that people, just take
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
Take a toy and then bootleg it. And then when I was at D-Con, I saw a guy named Spice Dream Toys, and he was doing some bootleg stuff and really interesting things where he would take a Han frozen in carbonite and like put candy in it so it's clear with candy. So I thought that was really interesting, and so it kind of gave me a lot of ideas to do stuff. And I did a couple of bootlegs a long time ago. My daughter and I dressed up, as Stormtrooper and Princess Leia. So I did little figures of those when I had my head scanned. So I did some figures of those and did some, card backs for that. And so I kind of like doing the card backs because it pulls me back to the graphic design part. And always trying to recreate, when I was a kid, trying to recreate like official documents or anything that looked official. So I just kind of like that feel.
I'm waiting for a painter. I talked about this with, man, I don't remember who I talked about it with. They were on the podcast where I've wanted someone to start painting card backs. Like
Oh,
just
that'd be interesting.
like paint the
Like
vintage.
huge.
Just like get a giant canvas and paint a vintage card back with all the tears and stuff in it. Like that's
Oh, that's
amazing.
great. Yeah, that would be really cool.
But no one has taken me up on it yet, so maybe I'll have to commission it. But yeah, I think that like encountering Suck Lord is always the first thing. And then the head swap, the kit bash, where we're kind of like dabbling in it. And it's great. Like, you went full blown VR sculpting. That's there's another artist, Doomco Design, who sculpted his tardigrade figure all VR. And it's amazing. And so it's like, what made you go VR instead of Nomad at the beginning?
I think it just because we, my friend and I, we had the headsets and we were just, it was, you know, pandemic and everybody's just kind of just trying different things. And at first when I saw it, I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But then when he got his printer, I'm like, hey, let's let's make something that we could print.
Yeah.
Like this one right here, his name's Rex. I made him so he could be printed with no supports, which makes it easy to mold too, because then you don't have to worry about bubbles. You don't have to vent and stuff like that. And so I got into an art project in 22 where I was, it was a big art project and it was 150 flowers with LEDs in them. So there's 150 flowers and each one had three leaves, all translucent with LEDs. And I had to sculpt those, and I sculpted those in Nomad because I had just gotten in those. We printed those on a filament printer with a channel for the LEDs. And then I molded and casted them. So they would light up. So it was basically this field of flowers is actually what it was called. And they all sang and the lights went up and they interacted with people going through them and all that. As I did that, I started making molds of my guys and then using them as dump molds for different, you know, putting different glow in the dark. So I had a bunch of those and I'm like, well, I got to start getting rid of these guys. So that's why I started the toy company.
Yeah. Tell me, so you start the toy company and tell me about the character that is your logo and that's over your left shoulder.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Big Guy. This is here. He is here.
That's what I'm talking about. He's great.
Yeah. He's, what I've been trying to do, especially since Rex, was try to make them as simple as possible because I tend to make them over detailed. And so when I made him, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Now I have kind of a blank, kind of a style to try to recreate. So, you know, it's still kind of I still kind of make them a little bit more detailed than Rex. Mm-hmm. But what I was going for was just very simple, very quiet. Like, there was a droid on the Obi-Wan Kenobi, TV show.
Oh yeah.
Called
yeah.
Ned B. Mm-hmm. He was yellow. His name is Ned B, and he's quiet and strong and, you know, he didn't talk. And I kind of liked the idea of having a big robot that is powerful but doesn't talk.
Yeah.
And that's how I came up with his name's Big Guy.
I think what's enticing about Big Guy is that, like, when we sculpt or when we try to make robots, we like put rivets and cracks and all kinds of stuff and like really rust them up. But he doesn't look like that. He looks like a futuristic robot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Kind of like Eve in the Wall-E. She's just sleek and has no real parts to her.
And I the way that you describe him, and he just like, again, gives off those Iron Giant, like gentle vibes, which is so cool. So you start sculpting and you like Big Guy becomes your logo, becomes everything about what you do, kind of, if it's always presented. Yeah. So how did we settle on robots out of everything?
I think I've always really kind of liked robots. And then I kind of like the juxtaposition of a artificial being having feelings or you know, just being gentle and not just a harsh machine, you know, like the opposite of the Terminator, basically.
Yeah.
I really did like the movie Wall-E. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that it was a robot love story.
Yeah.
Because nobody really thinks about, you know, that robots have feelings and stuff like that. And so I wanted something that would be have hard edges, but also look kind of cuddly.
Yes. And it absolutely does. And just jumping full in. I love the curvature of his body. I'm not sure, like, what made you choose the design aspect? Because it makes him stand differently, and I love how he stands. Seeing it in person was rad.
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of humanoid robots.
Okay.
And they're all, you know, the A-frame, you know, just proportionately like a person. I'm like, how about I try something like just really, like, if he's a worker who lifts and builds stuff, he'd have huge, you know, huge arms, and he wouldn't need big legs because he's, you know, just kind of moving stuff around. Or so I kind of wanted to exaggerate the strength of him and his arms over the rest of his body.
And then I do know that you have a dog that you've sculpted.
I do have, yeah. I have a dog. So if he's basically modeled after my dog, which I painted right there. Awesome. His name is R-CH13, which is Archie, and that's my dog's name is Archie.
Awesome.
So it's funny because I sculpted him about a month and a half before Decon. I'm like, am I really gonna make this guy? Okay, I'm gonna make this guy. Yeah. So I sculpted him, printed him, and I got him all done in time for DesignerCon. So
how funny.
That was like the fastest I had done it.
Yeah. So, and then I know that these get 3D printed, but I also know that you are a resin caster. And so you're doing kind of both. Do you, with the ones that you design in Nomad and the ones that you're printing, do you move back and forth with these designs for both?
For printing and casting?
Yeah.
Yeah. My end goal is always to cast them.
Okay.
Because I like the way that feels in your hands.
Okay.
I just like the, you know, it's like the old, it's basically like the old toys. I might do some static ones and paint them.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I just really like them as toys more than as mechettes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you see, I did print a big guy, like 12 inch. That's the one right here over my shoulder.
Yeah.
We did that in filament because my friend, COPO, who was also at my table,
mm-hmm.
he just got a brand new bamboo. So we're like, hey, let's do a big one.
I think like the big, I'm always a sucker for big toys. Like my dream is to have an original Rancor toy that's like printed and giant, like 3-4 feet tall. Just because that would be crazy to have. I love the big ones. And so you start making toys. How long do you start producing and selling before you get to Decon?
I haven't really sold online yet. I made about 5 different ones like Rex.
Okay.
And I was doing some casting and making, glow in the dark ones. I really like the glow in the dark ones. And a couple years ago, I was in Iceland and I came across an artist named Bootfoot.
Okay.
Bootfoot Toys.
Yeah.
Out of Iceland. And there was a little storefront, but it was closed. So I kind of, you know, I messaged him on Instagram. And by the time I got back home, there's a couple of toys that I want. There's one called, it was one that was a bent Wookiee, like from the Simpsons, when Ralph bent his Wookiee. I'm like, okay, I have to have that. And so I contacted him. I wanted to buy some from him. And he said, well, how about we just trade? And I'm like, oh, someone likes what I'm doing. Because I was really just kind of doing it for myself.
Yeah.
And so we did that trade. And then I'm like, okay. I think I want to go to Decon and see what we can do with this. And so that's how I started that.
And Decon is jumping into the deep end. I mean,
it really is.
Booths are not cheap. You're there with, like, you're one of 700 other vendors. The way that Decon is split is like booth versus table. So there's like a chance that you'll see 10-20,000. There's a chance that you'll see 500 people. Like, it's always up in the air.
Yeah.
Tell me about your experience with Decon.
Yeah, so I think I was a little low attendance this year, I think.
Okay.
I know last year I went to Decon and Tables, and there was a lot of people just in the small tables. And that's kind of the area I like, is the independent toy makers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the just casual collectors didn't want to go all the way to Las Vegas. So there's still a lot of the high-end collectors that wanted the exclusives, but I think it felt a little light this year.
Okay.
But I made a lot of connections, which I think is really what it was all about. I talked to Dove over at DKE Toys.
Heck yeah, Dove's awesome.
He's really great. And yeah. So I think I'm going to work with him next year to get a booth with a little bit better placement. Yeah. And also I learned that, you know, I learned how to set up a booth better
mm-hmm.
for next year, because this year I didn't really set it. I was just wanted to get product out there that I wasn't really focused on the presentation of the booth. And I think that's something that I really learned this year too. But overall, I had a great positive experience. I met a couple people that I had talked to offline, Death and Strawberries and yep. Kerfloss. Hung out with them a lot, and Dave over at M1 Toys and Ray, those guys are really great. So
what they've got going on with robots, I have their toy right here. This one.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one. Yeah.
They're crazy. I mean, what's fun about this podcast is everyone you've named so far has had an episode. So it's like, good friends, and good to see them every time we go to Decon. But yeah, you should be in Resin Alley next to Dove. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my goals next year, is work with those guys. And
yeah,
they've always been really cool to me. So
yeah, absolutely. I'm
happy to do it. When I do my resin pouring, I do it down in my, I live in San Francisco is where I'm at.
Okay.
But my friend lives in Encino and has a garage. So that's where I do a lot of my pouring and stuff. So next time I'm down there, I'm going to try to hit those guys up, because they're in Pacoima. So it's just right around the corner.
Yeah. Pacoima, I mean, man, next time you head down there, I'll head up. I'm in San Diego. That's not that far.
Okay, cool. I was just in San Clemente for Thanksgiving.
Heck yeah. And then you have to ask Dove to take you to go get tacos. There's a taco spot over there that's unreal. It's so crazy. So, I mean, with you have this thing where you start sculpting and your graphic design and those things are like feeding into this. And then you produce a couple characters and you're like, let's go to Decon. Let's jump into the deep end. So you kind of did the big thing that toy makers like to do.
Yeah.
So what's the next big thing?
The next big thing, I would love to get a 12-inch big guy done as Sufubi.
Okay.
I would love that. But I'm not sure if that'll happen next year or the year after, because that's a lot of lead time, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty big headache from what I've heard, but I want to try it. I know there's a guy in Denver, I think, Mile High Sufubi.
Yeah,
so we've used him. I might hit him up, but I asked you a couple of questions of how you did yours.
Absolutely. I mean, like, full disclosure, it is a process, right? Like, we started in May and I got product in, I mean, Paul at Mile High, incredible guy. Love talking to him, hung out with him a lot there. He's busy. Like, a lot of people love what he does. And so he's just cranking it out. I always tell people that
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray. We're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures at DKE Toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
especially now having gone through the process, if you can move product, so Fubi, that's a great option. If you cannot move product, you're going to sit on hundreds and hundreds of dollars of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that's keeping me from it right now. So I'll probably build out a couple more characters.
Yeah.
Really set up the website, see if people like them as much as I do.
Yeah.
And go from there.
But Sufubi is, I think that's when I look at Big Guy, I think of the Sufubi toy. Because of just how it's already sculpted so that it doesn't have crazy edges on it, and it's already sculpted to fit perfectly. And so that's honestly, I'm glad that that's the initial or the eventual goal. But it's not a terrible process. I mean, like he's in the US, so you get to kind of be, he's only an hour ahead of us. So you're just working like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I'd really like to try it.
Absolutely. Just so,
because I think in my art career, I've always I like trying different things. Like I've done silk screen. I've done painting. At a certain point, I was doing stenciling, out publicly, wheat paste stickers and stuff like that. But I've never really kind of followed through and gotten good at anything. So I'm trying just to stick with this and see how good I can get at it.
Heck yeah. I think that is the mindset that I struggle having. But I think that every artist needs, like, just stick with it, see where it goes, like make it bigger. I think there's that tendency in toys, because we can make so many different things, that if something doesn't go as well as we thought, we just move on. But like, don't move on. Like, there's so many cool things that could be done, and you have such cool designs. So I'm glad you're sticking around with those toys.
Yeah. I'm having fun. So that's, I think, you know, and it started out as a hobby, and you know, people are like, well, you're never going to make money at that. It's like, well,
maybe
it's a hobby right now. You know, people don't buy golf clubs expecting to make money. They want to play golf, you know?
Right. And
I think this hobby is a little bit cheaper than golf at this point.
Yeah. I think it's tough. Like, if your mindset is that you want to make money, this is going to be a really hard hobby to have. But if the mindset is to be creative and to like make a voice for yourself and really live into what you want to do, this is the hobby. This is the discipline to design. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so, I'm really enjoying it.
Now that you've done the big show, do you plan to do smaller shows around the U.S.? I mean, there's Assembly Required that happens. Collected Con now is up and running. Like, are those the type of things that you are headed for?
Yeah, I think I'd like to do that. I definitely think I'd like to do 5 points too, because that looked like it was like a lot of fun this year. So I'm definitely gonna look into seeing what shows are out there.
Yeah, 5 points. I haven't been, but Clutter does some cool things. So I'm assuming it's an amazing event.
Right. And it's in New York, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is incredible. So I think the big question then is, like, we can talk about like the next events and stuff like that. But when you look at your art career, you look at graphic design, you look at the robots and the sculpting you've done, what's the next step, like the immediate next step that you see for this toy brand?
Ah, boy, that's a good question. I'd like to move more into getting them into good packages and mm-hmm. you know, because of my packaging background. So I'd like to design some good packaging for them, not just have the product be, you know, in a bag with a topper, but just maybe do some boxes and really lean into make it. The goal is kind of try to make it look like they're more professional, less homemade and more like a toy company.
Yeah.
Because that's always kind of what I've strived for, is to make things look realistic, from an early age.
Yeah.
Something that could be passed off as, you know, as the real thing. So I just want to refine the design and, you know, find a style. Like, I really like Space Rabbit stuff.
Yeah.
Their promotional stuff is great, and their boxes are great. Everything about, I just really like their stuff. And so that's kind of an aim of mine is to get as good as or close to them.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be as good as them, but I really like their stuff.
Do you remember when the movie Small Soldiers came out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When the toys came out, they had this weird, it was a weird branding idea. I don't know what they were doing. They had like normal sized Archer and Chip Hazard. And then they had the like really giant sized ones. But in the normal sized ones, you could also get three big characters. I think it was like Punch It or Smash, whatever his name was. There was like a Rhino character and then this giant crazy one. And when I see a big guy, it's like a packaged toy like that. Like he's the big version of one of the in the toy line that he's in.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. I have to look into that.
I mean, the issue with action figures is like you need to be able to print 10,000 to make it.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't think any of us can sell 10,000 at this point.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was having a hard enough time because he's six pieces fully articulated. Yeah. And I was mixing the colors by hand. So if I messed up one piece, that whole guy is, you know, gone.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't able to mix the color just right to just do the arm or the, you know, the foot. It was.
So he's six pieces. Is that head, body, two arms, two legs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
then articulation is all done with magnets.
Oh, of course. Of course. I got to put the idea in your head and hopefully when you go to Decon again, it happens. Like a build a big guy zone where it's like different colors. You can make your own.
Oh, that would be fun. I think it could totally be. What I was thinking about doing is doing different arm positions. Instead of just the straight out. Maybe doing like a pack of arms, like accessories, so you can get big guy, but then you can get different arms for him where he's holding something or she's waving with one hand. Because I did a couple of different static prints of him waving or holding a sign and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome. So there's so much potential in these. Yeah, these like the bots that robots don't generally show emotion, but the robot shows so much emotion just in what it is. And I love that you're just doing the monochrome look. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. And I was doing some, I was going to do a poster.
Yeah.
I did some postcards where he's like a blueprint and you could see into his arm and all the gears and the, you know, the pistons and stuff like that. So since I did that in Nomad, I might just do one where he's cut away, almost like a Jason Freeney kind of thing. Not fully ripping him off, but, you know, just so one arm is half, and you can see all the intricate parts in it and do that, like a leg and half his body and stuff like that.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that stuff.
And I might do a bunch of posters, too, because, you know, once I have him in Nomad Sculpt, I can export them in any position and then, you know, go from there.
Heck yeah. Dan, it has been so good to have you on the podcast to talk about these toys.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
The last point of the podcast is really you get to plug everything about how they get to you, how they contact you, if they want to do trades, if they want to paint, how they buy any of that stuff. So please, please plug away.
Okay. Yeah. So the toy site to buy stuff is dasertoys.com. It's daser toys.com. And then mostly you'll find me on Instagram, which is daser_toys.
Awesome.
And that's where you'll find me is Instagram. Don't if you mind. Have any questions, I'll answer questions, you know, about the process because, you know, it took a lot of failing to get to where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to, you know, help anybody who needs help.
Awesome. Dan, thank you so much for coming to Toys on Tap.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.